Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies to this Sunday edition of The Big Puzzle. I'm Barry Prince, coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia through the facilities of People's Internet Radio. And also today, we are now being simulcast on shakeandwakeradio.com. Annie Olivo has done a great job in bringing the station back up. It was a station I was actually involved as a co-founder, and one of our dear friends passed away about 18 months ago, I believe it is now, and we've got the station back up and running, so kudos to Annie Olivo. We are a viewer-supported station, guys, so if you like what we're doing here on People's Internet and you like some of the guests and some of the conversations and you want to help us out, please hit the donate button. I know the station would much appreciate it. Well, today I'm joined by a gentleman who I actually have a great deal of respect for his courage and some of the stuff that he's bringing forward to Canadians and the way his podcasts are taking off and the audience he's gathering and the attention he's bringing to issues in Canada. I'm talking with Frank Bond today. I've done a couple of shows with Frank in the past, and to say I'm looking forward to this conversation today would be an understatement. How you doing, Frank, and welcome to the show, and thanks for taking time out of your day to join me.
Oh, it's not a problem. I appreciate the invitation. I always enjoy talking to you, Barry.
So let's start off, I was telling you before the show, let's start off with your number one list on your bucket list of things that are peeing you off about our Canadian government.
Well, I'm gonna start small and humble today, actually. It's because it's very much a first world problem. Actually, it's not a first world problem because the developing world doesn't have this problem. And what it is it's rural internet access, which is basically restricted by the CRTC in this country, because the CRTC, I've come to realize this week, I kind of knew it before, but it's really dawned on me again. In this country that we live in, everything is supply managed in one way or another. Either the government manages it directly or they manage it indirectly. And the telecommunications industry is supply managed by the CRTC. So where I live, there are no real internet options. So I've had cellular data. That's basically how I broadcast and I make my podcast and everything else. I have a cellular data package. It usually costs me about $300 a month just to have 100 gigabytes. And all of a sudden this month, Bell Canada, BCE, they trade on a stock exchange. Maybe this conversation you'll be able to short them. I don't know. They are claiming I have this high obscene usage, over $250 in usage this month over and above, and they have no means to prove that I've used it, but they're going to bill me for it anyway. The long and short of it is, like I could tell a big convoluted story about my interaction with them. I've climbed up the corporate chain of command. I've gotten all the way to the vice president's office, and basically the answer is the same at the bottom as it is at the top. You're tough out of luck, and you're on your own, and you're just going to have to pay. There's no options where I live. We have ExploreNet. ExploreNet is a company. I don't know if you have it out there, but they soak up all the infrastructure dollars that the federal and provincial governments want to cough up. We're talking millions in taxpayers' money. I've had them at 2G, 3G, 4G, LTE. I've had all their services over the last 10 years, and they suck equally. They never get better. They often get worse, and they just have nothing but excuses. And I can't say enough bad things about that company. Frank Vaughn, right here on the record, ExploreNet sucks. They're terrible. And a lot of this links back to the CRTC regulating the telecoms industry. And not to plug too much for the PPC right now anyway, but one of the things that excites me is talk of getting the CRTC out of the telecommunications industry and letting competition flood into this country. Because I know a guy, I'll just give two examples. I know multiple examples. I know a dude in Western China. He's in rural China, and his cellular data, no matter where he is, he's got 3 bars and he has unlimited packages on his cell phone. I know another fellow in the Philippines who somehow watches my stuff, and he says no matter where he is in the Philippines, doesn't matter how deep in the jungle, he's got signal and he's got unlimited data packages. These people have great internet. In Canada, with all our millions of dollars funneling into these companies, doesn't have it. And we've set up a protection racket to make sure that rural Canadians aren't getting service. We're managing scarcity, and a lot of people are making a lot of money off it. So if you want to ask me this week, right now I'm waiting for my internet to reset into a new billing period. So I've got 3 more days where I have to basically do nothing and produce very little, waiting for this thing to tick over. I have no options. I have built a studio. I've done it on spec, and I basically have 100 gigs a month to run my entire operation off of, and I don't have a choice. The government of Canada does not give me a choice. The CRTC does not give me a choice. Let's get them out of telecoms. That's what's in my bonnet.
Wow. You know what? Some of the stuff you just divulged to me, I wasn't fully aware of that you were in that kind of a situation. You got to pay that kind of dollar. How rural are you? I mean, you don't have any other access to the internet.
Go ahead. Do you know where the 401 is in Ontario?
Of course.
It's the main highway. I think every Canadian knows where the 401 is. I'm 5 minutes north of it, man. The trunk cables go up that 401, and they still haven't brought them up the highway. There's actually, like, wow. I am not that rural. I am between two populated centers. I'm in eastern Ontario, technically, but barely. It's not like I'm out in the boons. I'm not in the woods. Like, we've got services. We got snowplows. We got Walmarts and No Frills within a drive. Like, I mean, we're populated. And out here, I've been talking to my neighbors lately, dude. Think about this. Just to put it in perspective, if I ran with ExploreNet and I actually bought one of their $120 a month packages, I can expect, they advertise 25 megabits down and 1 megabit up. I guarantee you, the last time I had it, I never scored better than 0.7 megabits down and 0.1 up. And that would be at 2 o'clock in the morning when it was starting to run quote unquote well. I'll give BCE credit. Their cellular service, this turbo hub that I have works great, but you pay for it. You pay enormously for it. And there's no way to contest their data usage claims, which I'm just learning this week. So, you really have to monitor your hardware, and especially if you want to run a media operation, you got 3 gigabytes a day to work with. And you can make it work, but when you have a month like this where it screws up, you're into hundreds of dollars, like $250 in overage just this month, plus the $300 I would normally pay. $550 for 100, and I think I'm at 147 gigabytes of data use. Yeah, man, that's what I deal with. So, wow. You know, I get a kick out of it. I get a kick out of it. Sorry, I'll finish up just
I'm
on
not
this.
I'm trying to laugh. It's just crazy.
No, you're allowed to, because that's all you can do. If you didn't laugh, you would start smashing things. People, it's funny because I got these haters that follow me around online, and they're just like, oh, who's paying you? Oh, you're in bed with Trudeau, depending on who you're talking to. Oh, you're in bed with, you know, so-and-so, or you're George Soros paying you, or Putin. It depends on who's yelling at you that day. And it's really funny because to do what I do, it costs me, like it costs out of pocket. I have some donors that help out, but it doesn't make the cost. So it really bugs me because I have to pay the bills, and then I basically build this platform up. I build these podcasts, you know, you got people following you on Facebook, and they just follow you around and insult you all day. And it's like, you create this stuff, you pay for this stuff, just so some troll who's never made anything in his life, who's never produced anything, can follow you around and harass you. So anyway, it's just, that's kind of the situation I'm in.
Well, you know what? We're spoiled out here because, I get unlimited internet every month. As much as I could sit on here 24 hours a day, 31 days a month. And it's $78 a month. And I have I have fair bandwidth. I mean, I have good reception. I'm on Wi-Fi, but still it is incredibly cheap. I mean, you can go to any provider here and there's four or five that compete for it. I don't understand what's going on in Ontario at all, because out here we have, like I said, I believe there's four or five providers in this area that'll give you internet. And of course the competition's there. So henceforth, we're getting reasonable prices. But what you're telling me, I couldn't afford that every month, Frank. And I hope that the people that are following you, maybe are listening right now and, help you out with it. That's crazy, man. That's insane. I don't know how you do it. I'd be choked. I'd be moving somewhere. What about Toronto? Doesn't Toronto have multiple access or multiple providers, or is it the same situation? Are people in Toronto paying the same kind of money? I mean, what's going on? What's that? That's crazy.
It's fake competition is what it is. So you have, I was talking to a guy today, and he had a falling out with TELUS. So they were, you know, they had a big, big argument, big, big blowout. They're not helping them out, whatever. So he says, fine, screw you. Cut up my contract. I'll pay your stupid fees, whatever. And he goes over and he starts signing up with Koto. Well, Koto is owned by TELUS. So, I mean, there's no, like, there's the illusion of competition, but it's the same major players that are playing the game. The prices are roughly all the same. The only difference is how they structure their data plans. That's really the only big difference. But where I am, there's literally, depending on where you live, there's Rogers and Bell. They charge the exact same numbers. And there's ExploreNet. And if, you know, with ExploreNet, you might as well throw your money out the window because at least some of it might blow back in. It's just, it's such a waste. And it's been this way for 10 years, man. I've lived out here for 15 years. And you say, you know, move to Toronto. Toronto's probably got, well, actually Toronto does. If you go to Bowmanville, which is just on the outskirts of Toronto, they've got great internet service there. I've experienced it. It's like heaven. You can just do whatever you want. Right. But you got to live in the city, and I don't really want to do that. Once you get a taste of the country, you don't want to go back.
not a chance. And you're a farmer too, Frank. So the city is definitely out of the realm of possibilities. But that really, I mean, that's ludicrous. There should be something done about that because they really are restricting your access. And if other people in your area are experiencing the same kind of problems, well, you know, internet access is restricted. Henceforth, they're not doing a lot of research that they probably should be doing. So that's an ugly situation.
Or they're content creators. They might not necessarily be political or social, but they might have something to offer the world, and they can't offer that. And I actually catch myself. I just realized that now talking to you when I say it's a first world problem. And actually, it's not, because in the developing world, they have access to all this stuff. Like in most places that I've researched over the last week, from India to China to the Philippines to Vietnam, they have better services than I have here in Ontario. And I'm not that far from cities. What gives? Why? And the answer I've come up with is the CRTC. They have to get out of the way. They're protecting these big monolithic companies that have no incentive to actually provide decent service, at least here. I'm glad it's different for you.
Well, you know, when you talk about this issue, you could say the same thing about anything that government gets involved in, Frank. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter what aspect of government we do touch on. It's the same story. So I don't expect anything less from the government. I really don't. Anything they get involved in turns to poop. And this monopoly, I hope we can put a stop to it. But I want to shift gears here for a minute because one of the biggest pushbacks, I mean, we're going to talk about Maxime Bernier here for a bit, Frank.
Sure.
Yeah, there's a real ruckus going on in Canada right now. You know that. You know, people are really starting to pay attention. They're going to the platform. They're looking at it. But still, I'm getting this really, really big pushback from a lot of online hosts about his involvement in the Privy Council. And I know you did a video on that, but it's something I'm dealing with just about every day. It's a major kickback.
Sure.
And, you know, well, let's talk about it just for a few minutes. And I want you to speak on this issue because it seems to be a stumbling block for a lot of Canadians totally throwing their hat in right now with this gentleman. And I'm happy about what I see going on in Canada. We're going to talk about this whole new third party structure in Canada and what that means to Canadians after you talk on this issue about the Privy Council, if you would, sir.
Okay, so it's very simple. There's two arguments when it comes to the Privy Council. The main argument is he's involved in it, therefore he can't be trusted because his loyalty is sworn to the Queen. The issue with that is any cabinet minister, anybody that serves in government who becomes a cabinet minister is sworn to the Privy Council. That's it. So if you elect Donald Trump in Canada, just to pick somebody off the hop, he's going to be named to the Privy Council because it's a formality in our government. It doesn't mean anything. The second argument is that the Privy Council itself actually is a structure. And that the argument goes that anybody who's actually sworn to the Privy Council isn't sworn to the real Privy Council because in the 1940s, and it goes on to this constitutional argument, that means nothing. Because in practice, there's this idea that the government itself is illegal as it's constituted. But the fact is, even if it is illegal, it functions the way it functions because we commonly, the common belief is that government functions the way it does. So that there's this outmoded idea that I set aside. The bottom line is, when it comes to membership in the Privy Council, any government that is ever elected under our constitutional system, the way that it is construed, will have its cabinet ministers sworn to the Privy Council, and that's it. There's no way around it. So to me, it's a big, fat non-issue, and I don't have any concern about that. Like, I've actually, you know, I've addressed this directly with people around Max, and it's they just kind of laugh it off. They don't really know how to deal with it because it's, they've seen it come up, and the notion that the Queen is somehow running Max Bernier in the campaign has got to be the most laughable thing I have ever heard in my life, and I have a very hard time at this stage now understanding it. I can't take it seriously. Like, Max is, I mean, we live in a constitutional monarchy, folks, and there's things that are left over. I mean, we have a governor general that has the power to sweep away parliament. In practice, it doesn't happen. There's a guy that contacted me via YouTube. He's been barking up this tree for the last 25 years, actually, talking about making the governor general an elected position that all Canadians elect. And it would work almost like a president because it would have veto power over the legislature, which would be a really interesting dynamic. But right now, that's all theoretical. Like, we'd have to have an active parliament. We'd have to go through all the procedures. But as it is, when you're sworn into cabinet, you have to swear to the Privy Council. It's just formality. If there's one person in Ottawa, you don't have to worry about being in the pocket of the Queen or George Soros. It's Max Bernier, because he is hated by the established power. They're trying to destroy him. I mean, look at CBC. Look at that Wendy Mesley interview. I haven't watched it all yet, but she basically just, it's all about labeling him and trying to dismiss him. And they're talking about, oh, it's a vast conspiracy out of the United States. You have all this American money and you're violating election laws. It's all fake. It's all complete lies. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's about as much as I can say on it. I don't really have a concern about that. It's a formality. Well, it's part of our constitutional monarchy.
I'm at the same point as you, Frank, because I've looked into it quite a bit, and just some of the kickback I'm getting from a lot of people that really kind of, I think at this point, want to jump on 100% on board with this guy, but there still seems to be some reservations about that. So I just wanted you to talk on it for a minute. I told you I've had two conversations now with Maxime Bernier. And just the fact that this gentleman took time out of his day just to call back a normal, common Canadian, not some politician or lobbyist in the government, and actually had some extended conversations with me, said a lot about his true heart and what this guy is all about. And all my life, you know, I've hated politicians. I they lie to us. They'll tell you anything they want you to hear until they get elected. And when they get elected, everything turns around. We could run off example of that happening. But I think we have here a genuine individual. That being said, I think this rise of a third party in Canada, Frank, is the best thing that's happened to Canada this year. Because what we're looking at now, possibly, is a split in the conservative vote. I believe the conservative vote combined would eliminate a liberal majority. So what we're going to possibly see in Canada, two conservative parties and a liberal party. And if that was to happen, I could live with even the liberals achieving a minority government or a conservative party achieving a minority government, because you'll have real debate. You'll have real exposure on all issues to Canadians instead of a government that has basically rammed stuff down our throat for the last 3 years. None of it we voted for in our election, but that's the situation we're in. Given the situation and the way the system is set up, I think the best thing that could happen is either a majority government under Maxime Bernier. I would love to see that, or a minority government under any one of the three parties. What do you think?
Well, I think once the party is actually structured, we're talking 4 to 8 weeks, things are going to be very different from what they are today. There's a lot of organizational work that's being done. And I don't speak for the party, but I'm very close to the people that are trying to organize it, and I've spoke to Max several times, you know that. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much happy with my choice. I will be PPC as long as I can see into the future, because it's a new idea and it is real. It's not some fake garbage. This is a platform that you can sink your teeth into, and they will try to deliver it if they form a government, and they will work to advance that platform. And as time goes by, there will be room at conventions, at policy documents. They're going to build an online platform for their members that is second to none. It's probably a first in Canada, where you're actually going to be able to interact with policy discussion and have a place to reach out to party members. It's not just Facebook. It'll be like, I mean, they've really got some revolutionary thinking there they're going to develop. But this party is real. The commitments they make to you are real, and they will try to deliver them. That's why I'm there, because from the top down, Max is real, and everybody underneath him is real, and they all are united around this idea. And the thing with Max is he's a product of oh my goodness, two generations, I would say, of circumstance and built up political clout locally in Bose, but also in the nation. He's sort of the accidental public figure in a sense. I'm not trying to say that he hasn't created it, but it's taken a lot of work. He had to put up with 15 years of being suppressed in the Conservative Party of Canada, having his ideas ridiculed, having promises made to him and having them broken, having Andrew Scheer basically rob him of the leadership and then belittle his platform and tell him he needed to sit down or get out of the way. And so he had to put up with 15 years of that. And in that 15 years, he's become known from coast to coast as this libertarian conservative who stands up for individual freedom and will just tell you what is in his heart. And that is something Canada desperately needs, because everything about our politics is completely fake. You can't believe in a platform. This isn't just the Liberal Party. You mentioned broken promises. I talk to gun owners a lot, and they say, oh, you know, if Trudeau gets back in, we're going to lose all our guns. So we have to elect a conservative majority. And I say to them, the PC government under Campbell Mulroney gave you pins in your magazines. That's why you have those restrictions. The CPC promised you that they would rewrite the Firearms Act and they would represent legal Canadians and all this other stuff. They got rid of the long gun registry and they made it easier to transport your restricteds. Both of those things are gone now. So when are we're talking 30 years of government. When are we going to stop holding the line and start pushing back? And if you look at Max on everything from the CRTC to gun owners to free expression to reclaiming our destiny from the United Nations. I mean, talking about ripping up our agreements with them, there's different things in the platform about getting our sovereignty back from the UN. Exactly. That is just what we need. And you don't hear the mainstream parties talk about it.
Yeah, that one of the points that he made that really resonated with me, because our removal from, or the United Nations removal from any business in Canada would be an awfully good day in my world. So, I've read his platform, and everything he says so far that I've read absolutely makes perfect sense. And he's calling out stuff that no other mainstream party in Canada would even mention in their platform. So I'm supporting him right now, and I'm hoping, you know, there's always a little voice in the back of your head going, are we being played? And, you know, at this point right now, Frank, I've learned over the years that I have to stay outside the box, that I really have to study things and watch things carefully. But at this point, after my conversations with the man, the way he is, when you're having a conversation with a person, you kind of get a feel about what's coming from inside of that person. And I got the feeling that everything he was saying to me and the expressions we shared with each other about our fears coming for Canada were genuine. So I want to get behind the man and support him at this point. To me, he is the only logical course going forward in Canada. If we get 4 years of Scheer as a majority, the same agenda is just going to keep going in Canada. They're just
there's no difference.
They're two heads of one snake, and people have to understand that this has been going on in Canada for how many years now? You got the Conservatives in, the Liberals. Well, we hate the Conservatives, we'll get the Liberals in. The Liberals get in, we hate the Liberals, we'll get the Conservatives in. And it's been going back and forth like that in Canada for how many years now? Now we got a third party coming in. And to me, like I said earlier, I think this is great. I really do. I think this could be a change in Canadian politics coming forward.
Yep, we don't have choice. We have the illusion of choice. So they basically say, here's the agenda, and we're going to argue about how we implement the agenda, and we're going to call that choice. And I think the red shirt, or the red jersey Liberals and the blue jersey Conservatives are never going to switch parties, because they don't read platforms. They don't look at policy. They just, all they see is the color blue, and that's all they're ever going to do. They follow me around all day. They whine and they moan and they name call and they do all this stuff. But the last thing they do is actually meet you with informed debate and ideas. So like, you can't get everybody, but the rest of us in Canada who don't feel represented. And this is the thing. I don't know if you saw a link I posted, but I did a live stream with four other YouTubers, or three other YouTubers there a week and a half ago. And the three of them, I think all three of them voted for Trudeau, and they quit, or they got disillusioned very quick. And people will say, well, how could you ever vote for that guy? Well, the fact is there were some things in his platform that were kind of, I mean, might entice you. In my opinion, 2015 wasn't exactly full of abundant choices. it was very difficult to choose from that menu and actually feel like you made a choice that mattered. And that's my opinion. I wasn't a big fan of Stephen Harper. You know, I wasn't a big fan of Trudeau, but if you looked at the platform, let's just pick an example, electoral reform. Let's have a conversation about how our government functions. That's a pretty exciting promise that might compel somebody. And most of the people that I talked to in that live stream, that was one of the things they voted for, was electoral reform. And mm-hmm. it was one of the first things he dropped as soon as he got in power. And, oh, I'll go around the country on the taxpayer's dime and accept responsibility. What a mook. But anyway, my point being is that these three all come from different backgrounds, and they're either new to Max or they're old to Max. They found out Max was running. They learned about him during the CPC leadership thing. And so they bought memberships in the Conservative Party of Canada to back him. And then they stayed in the Conservative Party of Canada to back him. And then when he quit, there was nothing there for them, so they left. But these are liberals. And myself, there's two guys I'm thinking of. The one guy, I know he's voted NDP for at least 20 years. That's as long as I've known him. And it's not like he's been perfectly happy with the NDP, but that's how he voted. He contacted me the other day and he said, I read Max's platform and I'm signed up. Where do I sign up? How do I volunteer? How do I help set up the EDA? And I said to him, you've read the platform, right? And he's like, yeah, I love it. How do I help get this going? So my point being is we're not just drawing from the conservatives. We're going to draw half and half. It's from across the spectrum because there are people who default position to the Conservative Party of Canada because they don't have any other choice. And there are people who've made a judgment that the Liberal Party of Canada is the best place for them. They're classical liberals. They're social liberals. They are whatever they are, but they're not happy there. And they find their way to the PPC. And that's, it's a beautiful thing. You said earlier, how happy you are. I couldn't be happier. We're building the future right now, and we might actually save this country.
Well, we don't really have a choice at this point, do we, Frank?
No, we don't.
It is our, and I say this to people all the time, it's your civil and your moral duty at this point. Knowing what we know is going on in our country right now, if you don't get involved, I say shame on you. Because your children are really, I use this phrase a lot, and it sounds corny, but your children are going to curse you because there is so much information now about the corruption going on in our governments. It's not something that people can't go out and find out about themselves in a couple hours if they want to do some research. So I tell people all the time, you just got to go on the internet and look at some of the things our government has done. Some real hardcore facts about what's gone on in Canada since Trudeau has taken over. And prior to him, Trudeau is just carrying on the same agenda, but much, much harder than anybody prior to him. And ask sure. if any of it makes sense. And none of it makes sense to me. None of it. Nothing this government has done since they've been in power is beneficial to Canadians. Name me one thing, Frank. I can't think of one thing he has done since he's come to power that's really beneficial to Canadians. So if there is something, can you inform me?
I come up blank. I really do.
Why is that? I thought this guy was elected to represent our concerns and listen to the voice of Canada. I mean, this guy is
a raving lunatic.
He's a raving lunatic. Go ahead.
I've got it. It's he's provided a place to channel your anger and your frustration. Because without him there, I suppose, we wouldn't have somebody to just smack our head at every single day and think, what is this government thinking? I'm not sure that's really a positive, but that's the best I can do.
You know, I look at the lunacy in our government and I think it's bad, Frank, but then I look at some of the things that are going on in Europe right now and it just absolutely boggles my mind. I mean, I had a conversation, and I mentioned this last week, but I had a heart-to-heart, face-to-face conversation with four Germans about what's going on in their country. And I'm glad I had that conversation because, of course, you hear and see lots of videos on the internet. And, of course, there's always the pushback that a lot of it's BS and it's not really happening to the extent that you're being told so through these alternative media sites. But then I got to sit down with these four people and have a conversation. They live in a little town. He said an hour and a half north or 2 hours north of Berlin. 15,000 people in their little town, growing up there all his life, enjoying a very, very quaint, beautiful life all his life, except for the last 2 years where he now says that his town of 15,000 people, the women are virtually scared to walk the streets at night. And he's sitting there with his wife, who was 23 years old, and his mother and his father. And they're all, you know, looking at me and they're telling me the truth. I thought this was, he says, you know what he told me? He says, if anything, what's going on in Europe right now is being downplayed, and it's actually worse than you actually think. So what's going to happen in Canada with this, what the absolute lunacy going on at our borders right now under this United Nations Third World Safe Agreement that we're obligated to follow? I mean, it's just beyond anything I've seen in my life. We got people coming into Canada that are basically unvetted. You can't vet people from a country that has no background on these people. They're not a situation like North America where everything about our life is known about on a computer. They know when you go to the bathroom in Canada, in the United States. But over there, it's not like that. So how can you be vetting these people? And then I listened to that report come out here a couple of days ago that 65% of these people that are showing up and claiming asylum, refugee status in Canada, have actually gained that status in the United States of America, and they're not fleeing anything. They're coming north because of the giant, great, big ticket and meal ticket and benefits the government's going to give them the day they walk across our border. It's just absolute lunacy, Frank. Go ahead, I want you to talk on this.
Well, you can't have open borders in a welfare state at the same time. It's impossible. Our system's going to collapse under the weight. And this idea that we are somehow beholden to a UN document, or that even that their claim is legitimate, there is no legitimacy to a claimant coming from the United States who's already been there. Like, I went down to Cornwall. I visited the refugee camp there. I spoke to these people. They have been in the United States. The ones that I spoke to have been in the United States for years. They're wearing suits. They've got dress shirts. They have cell phones and plans and data plans better than Canada. And a lot of this, I mean, the way that they're coming into Canada at Roxham Road basically renders null and void their asylum claim to begin with, because they're not even coming in at a legal port of entry, and they're not presenting themselves in an embassy or doing anything properly. So the government is lying. The government is lying because, in essence, in Canada, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms is null and void due to the whim of government. And the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, what little it's worth, does not apply to people coming across the border. And I think it was only 2 or 3 months ago, the Supreme Court more or less struck down our Constitution with the interprovincial trade ruling, which said the Constitution is so clear about the fact that there should be free trade within the border, and the Supreme Court ruled against the Constitution. I couldn't believe it. So back to the point I'm trying to get to is, when the government says they don't have powers to deal with this, to deport, to close the border, to stop these people, to just turn them back, to arrest, to detain, they lie. And even the Conservative Party of Canada is lying about the solution. They say they want to fix the border crisis. But in their plan, and this is what I'm talking about, in their plan, every single person that's already here and everybody that comes into this country in the next 18 months isn't going to get sent back. They're all going to be on a pathway to citizenship.
I heard that.
And it's the truth. I confronted Michelle Rempel, the shadow minister, about this very thing. And her answer was to just demean and insult me without answering my question. And then after a long enough period of time, she just blocked me. 5 hours, all she did was name call. And she couldn't. And all I wanted to know is, under your plan, and she actually asked me at one point, she says to me, so what would you have us do? And I said, I'd have you reopen all those asylum claims. You can go back retroactively and revoke those asylum claims. It's totally within the government's power to do so. So Trudeau can do whatever he wants. His courts can do whatever he wants. But between your power to revoke and the notwithstanding clause, if some court overturns you, you have the absolute power to fix this problem and fix it all the way back to 2017. I think beginning of 2017, where it really kicked off and started. And yeah, they don't want to do it. Nobody. And so both parties are lying. One party says they have to do this. The other party says they're going to fix it. Neither party has any plan, and they have all the authority if they have power.
You know, I've been following that very, very closely, and I watched that Twitter war between you and Michelle, and after hearing some of the comments she made to you right off the bat, I lost all respect for that woman, due to that exchange you had, Frank, and a lot of people have gone there and watched it, and they're really starting to get a gist for exactly what's being played on the Canadian people right now. I know that I'm talking to people every day now. Yesterday down at the farmer's market, I wear my Trudeau for Treason or Trudeau for Prison t-shirt everywhere I go, but a lot of people were getting into the discussion about the borders, and we talked about a lot of things, and there was actually people there that actually listened to that Twitter war you had with Michelle Rempel. So you're getting a lot of views on it. It's really opening up people's eyes to where she's really at. And it's just another pawn.
Well, I was surprised. I was genuinely surprised. Her close personal friends who have gotten in touch with me to tell me that I was the guilty party, that I baited her, that I goaded her, that I trolled her. Anybody who can read that exchange and look at it knows full well. I quoted her directly and I asked her an informed question. That's all I did. And then she'll claim, oh, well, you posted a meme about me. I posted a meme about your policy for the party that you represent. It wasn't personal. She said, oh, you personally attacked me. I criticized the policy you put forward in your name for your party, where you claim you're going to fix this problem and you lie. And to me, that makes it worse, because the liberals I shouldn't say that. That's a different issue. Both parties, the governing one and the one that wants to be the governing party, are lying about this. It's very simple. You send them back. You open those asylum claims up and you have a real good look at them. And if you can find legitimate people who somehow managed to get to the United States fleeing a war zone and trudge their way up to the Canadian border and somehow they didn't claim asylum in the United States, if a whole pile of circumstances occurred that renders their claim legitimate, okay. But Michelle even said it herself. The courts are more inclined to just give these people asylum because there's so many of them. So the argument the Conservative Party is using is that the more people come to the border, the more asylum claims are going to be granted because of the number, because we have to process them all. Both parties, the governing party, doesn't have to do this. They're choosing to do it. And for some reason, the CPC is carrying their water while trying to look like they're not. And honestly, it's about the integrity of our country. We're talking tens of thousands of people. I read an article today that said it could actually be double. Like, it could be double what the official government numbers are, which is really disconcerting that nobody knows how many people are actually in this country. They come in and they just disperse into the population. That is really terrible for our future.
Well, it is. It's unbelievable, Frank. And this is going on every day, and I'm just asking myself, what's it going to take? How many more people have to be shot in Canada, Frank, before the Canadian people get off their butts and start screaming about this? I keep watching these videos on Maria Shen, and, if that doesn't bring tears to your eyes, what this family's going through, or went to a park and got raped, apparently, sexually assaulted and murdered by an immigrant let in the new Trudeau's program. We've got to call it what it is. There was no vetting done on the background of this gentleman. I read reports about it. This kind of stuff is going to keep going on and amplify and increase in our country. The Danforth shooter, of course, is another example. We've had how many terrorist attacks? And we've got to call a spade at this point in history. I'm not a racist person, but I am definitely against a cult that propagates murder and some of the things we see going on in the United States, in Europe, and now in Canada. And it's only going to increase. This government is absolutely, in my world, this is treason against the Canadian people. Trudeau made a statement, Frank, and you know this. He said, I'll be personally responsible for any damage or harm perpetrated on the Canadian people under my new refugee program. He made that statement in 2016. We got to keep throwing that back in his face. This man needs to be challenged. One of the things that really kind of encouraged me, and I want to talk about this for a couple of minutes, I'm sure you're aware of it, what's going on with Bonnie Crooked Crombie in Mississauga and the private charges that have been levied against her. Are you aware of that situation or following it all?
I'm only vaguely aware of that situation. But please, if you can talk about it, I would.
It's a blockbuster situation, buddy, because it's really going to eventually mainstream. Right now, they're trying to not talk about this, but eventually it's going to be covered on mainstream. Bonnie Crombie is going to have to appear in court in Ontario on October the 2nd. To face 8 criminal charges levied against her by a firefighter employed by the city of Mississauga under her watch. And the evidence and the claims made against her and the charges filed against her are very, very damning charges. And I've looked at the information and the statements and the witnesses, and Bonnie Crombie is in a lot of trouble, a lot of trouble. And this will not, the mainstream is really working hard right now to not touch this subject, but it's going to come out in the mainstream. They're going to be forced to expose it. One of the charges alone carries 14 years in jail. And I can send you over the list after we finish the show today. I'll send you over the information. Kevin's done a couple of vids on it, and that's why I'm Kevin Johnson was supposed to join us today, guys. He is the mayor candidate for Mississauga, Ontario, and he's been covering this story extensively. And for some reason, I have not been able to get in touch with Kevin today, so I hope nothing's happened
maybe
to
him.
I don't know. He's usually pretty reliable, Frank. He comes in all the time when we're doing shows, but I don't know where he is. So
I might be a jinx on that. I did a conversation with him a while back. I haven't been able to upload it yet because of issues I've had. And then I did another conversation with him. And then ever since the Spawny Crombie stories came out, I've called him a few times. He's called me a few times, but we keep missing each other completely. So maybe I'm a jinx. If Kevin's out there listening, you know, I definitely want to learn more about this and try and break the story about Bonnie. People need to know about it.
Well, yeah, and like I said, the mainstream will quash it and keep it under the wraps as long as they can, Frank, but they're going to be forced to expose this story. And it couldn't come at a better time, of course, with their election for mayor is next month. And I say, boy, what a blessing this would be when this gets exposed to the public, the amount of corruption that's involved in the office of mayor of the city of Mississauga. So, of course, she is totally, totally on board with the leftist agenda, really, really propagating anything to do with Islam as far as the city of Mississauga. We've looked at the connections her people that are involved around with the connections to the mosque and Muslim Brotherhood and Karen organizations like that. These trails to these organizations are undeniable, and be a great thing to get her out. And I really like what Faith Goldie's doing in Toronto. I know we're broadcasting on a station in Ireland, but Canadians are listening to this show, so get behind Faith Goldie in Toronto, because she really is an unbelievable individual, Frank. I love that woman to death.
Well, and I think, because
her values are true. Go ahead.
No, and I think what's happening with her in the media is absolutely shameful. I'm trying to keep it focused when we're talking about her, simply because the most aggravating thing to me right now is she is showing consistently in public polls, which are absolutely skewed, not in her favor. She's showing anywhere from 5 to 7% base support. And there are people that are going to attend some of these mayoral debates who have a fraction of her support, yet somehow they're on the stage. And the one common denominator is they're all leftists. Every single one of them, from John Tory to all his competition, they're leftists. Yeah. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, I don't give a darn if you believe or you support everything Faith Goldie's ever said all the way back to the day she was born. I don't care. If she can pull 7%, 6%, 5%, or even higher than those three numbers, she deserves a place on the debate stage. And the whole reason they leave her off the debate stage is they know she will dominate, and they don't want to give her the attention. And if these crooked media companies, these media houses, they pass off this idea that they are doing a public good, a public service by hosting these debates. If they're going to claim that myth, if they're going to soak up all that attention that they're doing the public a service in Toronto, they need to include all the candidates that are competitive, because that's democracy. If you're going to virtue signal about yourself doing a big favor for democracy and helping the people get informed, but you're picking and screening out the candidates that you think are desirable, you're only including leftists and no conservatives, it's shameful. She needs to be in the debates, period.
Well, of course, you just described a total fascist state. And if they pull this
absolutely
off, then we know already that we're in basically a fascist state in Canada. We see the freedom attack attacks on freedom of speech across the board, Frank, and it is ramping up like crazy. Everybody that I talk to that are involved in what we're doing right now are seeing the attack, and I'm seeing them on my Facebook pages. Links and stuff are being taken down. I am actually surprised that I haven't been put into Facebook jail yet. I got to get working on that, because I'm obviously not hitting it hard enough. But it's unbelievable some of the attacks I see going on. I mean, like Alex Jones or not, the fact that he was able to be silenced really should wake people up just to how far our system and our society is falling into a state of fascism. And that's where we find ourselves right now. I'm in very, very deep fear for the future of our country. And like I said, I think this thing going on with Maxine and this new party, I'm going to put my support behind the man. And like I said, I said earlier in the show, I hate politicians. I hate the system, the way it's worked for the last 100 years for fellow Canadians. But here's a breath of fresh air. And like I said, the more I talk to the man, the more I believe he's the real deal, friend.
Yeah, 100%. I'm I can't detract from what you just said in any way. The PPC and Max are the only hope this country has, flat out. I mean, people need to set aside their personal problems, their own pet politics. I've been talking to various interest groups and coalitions and different people who want to start political parties and everything else, and they've all got their own bag of pet politics. And you know what? It's time to set that aside, because the country's at stake. And what Max is offering is pretty freaking good, and it's the only chance we have. He has a national name. He's got really smart people around him. They know how to get the attention. And look at what he's doing. He's combating the leftist media. He's combating the leftist paradigm. He's actually campaigning on something different while still being socially liberal. Like, we're talking about a guy who's patriotic, who is socially liberal and fiscally conservative. We're talking about a healthy nationalism, a healthy patriotism. And you're not going to get that from any of the other parties. They talk a good game, but even there, they talk a weak game. They use milquetoast words. They say empty platitudes and phrases that don't mean anything. They sound good, I guess, but they don't mean anything. Then look at Max's Twitter feed. Look at how he responds to things. He's very real. Canada needs a big dose of reality.
Boy, do we ever. Well, hey, Frank, why don't you get involved? Why don't you? I can't think of a gentleman that articulates speech better than you, than I've heard from a lot of politicians, and we need you in the fight, so why don't you throw your hat in there? You know what? Be quite honest, if it wasn't my situation with Revenue Canada, which I'm not going to talk about too much right now, but I've been defiant with them, and it's the only thing right now, honestly, that at this point, like I said, I've come to the conclusion that Max deserves my support, and I'd even consider throwing my own hat in the ring, because it would give us the protection of a political umbrella, and it allows us to have our thoughts heard by the public instead of being quashed. So, but anyways, we need individuals. I look at other people that are talking about Maxime Bernier. I have a lot of deal of respect for guys like Joe Hayes, the Northern Patriot, a lot of other people that I'm following in Canada right now. And they're pretty well reiterating everything that you just said. So we really need to make this happen for the future of our country. Buddy. We do. Because this country is going to go down the tubes. We get another 4 years of liberal or conservative government in this Canada. In Canada, our country is going to change in ways that we can't even imagine, Frank. Go ahead.
There's no real variety on the table. None of them want to really address immigration. The conservatives dress it up in language, but they don't want to reduce the number. They don't want to actually address the asylum problem. If anything, if I was somebody following the news cycle in Canada, I would be I'd be coming to Canada pretty quick, because no matter how the next election turns out, you got a pretty good chance you're just going to get gifted a citizenship, which is pathetic. And it's not just, you know, people talk about, oh, it's old stock Canadians, whatever. I talk to a lot of different people from a lot of different ethnic backgrounds. This has nothing to do with ethnicity. This has to do with national integrity. Everybody, Canadians of all backgrounds, want this country to be integrous. We don't want to see it go down the tube. A lot of these people have struggled to get here for years, paying fees, paying enormous money, and now they're finally here, and they're paying into the system. We're looking at taxpayers. They don't want to see it go down the tubes either. So this is a multi-ethnic thing that brings us together around a common core culture. And that's the difference. Exactly. There's your ethnic, and then there's your cultural. And what Max is talking about, what a lot of us are talking about, is this country has a cultural heritage of common law, freedom, individual responsibility, respect, fairness. And these things began to change. Started actually a little bit under Diefenbaker, but it accelerated under Pierre Elliott Trudeau. And we've been dealing with this encroaching socialist state since the 1960s, 1970s. And we want to turn it back. I mean, a Frenchman from southern Quebec wants to turn this thing around. Bose, I don't know if people know this, because there's a lot of suspicion about Quebec and Quebecois and people born there and all this sort of stuff. Bose is the entrepreneurial heartland of Quebec. I mean, we're talking about, they call Max the Albertan from Quebec because he's so about individual liberty and freedom and personal responsibility and cultural integrity. We do have something in Canada that's valuable. We have an identity that we need people who come here to claim and retain, and we need to protect that identity from the horror that would be open borders in our welfare state. Like, we're seeing it right now. public coffers are drained. There was an apartment fire in Toronto a couple weeks back. I think it was 2 weeks ago. 1,500 people got put out of their homes. There's no room in the shelters. There's no room in the hostels. There's no room in the hotels because the government, that means you as a taxpayer, is putting these people up who have just crossed the border illegally. They're jumping the queue in front of citizens. Exactly. Illegals.
That have lined up for years to get into this country, and now they see it falling apart. It's absolute lunacy, Frank. It's absolute lunacy. It is. It drives me nuts every day of my life. But we have a light on the horizon.
Barry, you have a caller.
I see a rise in Canada. Barry. I see people becoming aware. I see people getting involved. And we got a call coming in. But folks, go out and get yourself a Trudeau for Prison t-shirt 2018. Wear it in your community. It is the most powerful social tool that I've ever put on my back. Engaging in conversations. It gives people a neutral statement that everybody can relate to right now, whether it be black, white, Catholic, Christian, whatever denomination. They see it. They are disturbed and they want to talk. And putting that on your shirt, guys, do it. You'll love it. I get engaged in conversations every day. I think we had a call coming in. If it doesn't, we're down to the last 5 minutes of the show.
Yeah, I'm here.
And yeah, Kelly wants a quick question for you, Frank. We've got about 4 minutes left in the show right now, Kelly.
Okay. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. You're live.
Okay. Hi, Frank. It's Kelly Elizabeth in Southern Alberta. How you doing?
Hey, Kelly. How you doing? Good to hear you. Good to hear from you.
Yeah. I've actually been sending you some messages, but we'll talk about that later. I have a question. There's quite a bit of talk about Mad Max allowing the libertarians to merge with him and come on board. I like the idea, but the comments that I'm seeing on social media, they're somehow looking at him as being some kind of a traitor for allowing this to happen. I like the idea. I think it'll give them instant structure more than what they have right now. I wanted to know what your thoughts on that were.
You got 1 minute, Frank.
Very quickly, how do people plan to win elections? If you don't build a coalition, how do you plan to win an election? I've seen people say, don't let the NDP, ex-NDPers in. Don't let ex-liberals in. Look, there's people who are unhappy from all across the political spectrum, but specifically with the libertarians, I wasn't trying to get away from your question. When it comes to the libertarians, they will have to accept the platform, just like the rest of us. We have to accept the platform, and there's things in that platform that really appeal to the libertarians. So they might come in, they might not, but they're going to have to make a choice. Are they going to back that or not? And if they do, great. Come on in. We're here for you.
I think it's a good thing. I think that, elections are about math. Math is absolute. And I think that, it's more numbers. And I think
we can't do anything if we don't have electoral success. That's it.
Right.
So you better figure out how we achieve that. And I mean, drawn from the CPC, drawn from the left, drawn from the right, drawing disaffected people from all over the place and people who don't vote, that's the way to do it.
Yeah. Gotta cut you off, guys. We're out of time for the first hour.
All right.
Thanks for the question, Kelly.
I'll send you a message. I'll sign off. Bye-bye.
Yes, please do.
And Frank, always a pleasure talking with you, buddy. And I want to get together and do this again real soon. Pleasure having you on, buddy. We are going to be off the air here for a couple of minutes. We'll be back. Listen, Frank, you're welcome to stick around for the second hour. I've got Roger Landry. I'd like you to meet the man. So can you stick around for a bit?
Sure.
Okay. We'll be back in 5 minutes, guys. I'm going to take a wee break, and we'll be back. Well, welcome back to the second hour of the show, folks. I enjoyed that conversation immensely the first hour, and Frank has been gracious enough to hang around. And I am joined by a very, very good friend of mine, a gentleman I've done too many shows to count over the last 5 years. It's been integral in educating me a lot of subjects in my life. I'm joined by Roger Landry from the Liberty Beacon. Welcome, Roger, to the show, and thanks for taking time today to join us.
Look, I got to tell you something. I have such a boring life. Well, it's actually not boring. I mean, I'm constantly being smacked in the face by progressive news every single day, and I'm sure you understand what I'm talking about. But I really don't have an excitement in my life that I get afforded every time I get a chance to talk with other intelligent people about what's really going on this planet. So I do appreciate you saying thank you, but from me to you, thank you.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you in, Roger. And let's talk about Justin Turdhead. I mean, Trudeau for us. Beep, beep. Today I forgot at the beginning of the show, and I meant to do this. It was on my little bucket list here to welcome to the show the Canadian Intelligence Services and the RCMP and Revenue Canada and whoever else happens to be listening in our conversation today. Welcome to the show, guys. Go ahead, Roger.
Well, I got to tell you something, okay? We have in this country what a lot of people, and I qualify a lot of people by meaning and if you got a group more than 1,000, okay, that think our president is an absolute clown, okay, that think that he is Hitler, that think that he is, and again, we assign erroneous, aspects to an individual just via the political tune. When people are confronted with the name Justin Trudeau in the United States, a vast majority of them giggle. All right. One of the terms that comes out immediately is soy boy. And if you're catching my drift here, okay, every picture we get of him is of like when you see the, or we didn't see actually, the negotiations for trade that Trudeau and Trump just absolutely couldn't get together on. So what you're seeing is Trudeau being represented as the soy boy, as the guy who has no spine, no backbone, so on and so forth. Okay, the millennial, loser, literally. So what do a vast majority of Americans think of Trudeau? It's just like everything else that we are given to understand or propagandized to understand. It's not reality. Now, what do I seriously think of Trudeau? I think Trudeau is probably the worst progressive issue that could have happened or circumstance that could have happened to Canada at the wrong time.
Well, we sure have our hands full up here.
So do we. We're stripping the entire deep state down here that's trying to kick a duly elected president out of office. We have the first open coup in American history. We're watching it. That's what's happening in America.
And the repercussions for Canada would be astronomical. People don't realize what the implications of collapse of the political system in the States, which is what we're talking about when all these sealed indictments, and if this chain of evilness is actually brought down, it is long and it's deep. And the disruption in the American system is something that I think about a lot. Let's talk about that one issue for a minute. What would that actually do in America if all of a sudden, Roger, all of these sealed indictments were open and all these people started getting arrested? What would happen in the United States of America? And what do you think the repercussions for Canada would be? And then I'd like Frank's opinion on this. Go ahead.
Oh, I would love to have Frank's opinion on this as well. But the first thing I'm going to tell you is that it's not what you think it is, okay? If all of a sudden, all right, what we have been promised for so long automatically or just starts to come true. If we start to see mass arrest, if we start to see all of a sudden the guest list at Guantanamo Bay growing, if we see these things actually happening, and there are some saying it is actually has already started with several hundred arrests already having been made. But again, this is something that needs to be validated before we can beat the drum on it. But is it putting a smile or a smirk on someone like my face? Absolutely. I'm going to tell you right now that it could be the most traumatic experience in the United States, not since 9/11, not since World War I or World War II, since the Civil War. Okay, that's how big it would be. But will it bring this country down? No. What you would see is an uprise in patriotism across this country. The conservative, the red wave that you have seen that brought Trump into office, so on and so forth, would swell phenomenally. I think it would be an absolutely phenomenal thing for this country if we took all of these traitors, these seditious idiots, and plugged them right in where they should be, and let all of the nonviolent criminals who smoked pot and went to jail for 10 years out so they'll have a bed.
What do you think, Frank, about what's going on down there? I know you don't. I don't know how much you follow American politics, but what are your thoughts on this?
Well,
thanks for hanging around.
Oh, no problem. And myself, you know, I was a big Hillary Clinton supporter. No, I'm kidding. I really wasn't.
You didn't say that, folks.
Sorry.
No. So I followed American politics. I followed American politics as long as I can remember. I liked what Ron Paul tried to do. I watched him get repressed by the system. And basically I felt the same way about American politics that I do about Canadian politics, or I did up until recently, was that it's a black morass and it was absolutely hopeless. And then I watched I watched Donald Trump declare his candidacy June 16th. I believe it was June 16th of 20, whatever it was. It was a long time ago now.
Yeah, 15, I believe.
And I, 15, that's right. And I watched that speech and I said to myself, now that is different. I've never heard anything quite like that being expressed that way, but I'm going to wait. And so I waited from June until sometime into the new year before I really got invested. And I looked, I'm just like, okay, what's this guy done in his life? Okay, well, he's cheated on his wives. I don't see that as a problem with how he can do his job. He's been a cutthroat businessman in a world of cutthroat businessmen. I don't see that as a drawback. I looked at all the hit pieces. I watched all the bad documentaries. I read a book that was anti-Trump. I read his books. I looked at it all and I concluded this guy is different. He may not be a Rand Paul or a Ron Paul libertarian, but he's very different. And I've said since I can remember, since I was a kid, I've always said the United States either needs a revolution or it needs a rebel billionaire. And you now have a rebel billionaire sitting in the presidency. And I mean, even when it comes to Canada-U.S. relations, what Trump has on the table in terms of trade, we should be trying to sign that. Get rid of supply management.
It's very fair.
At the same time, we ask for farm subsidy. That's got to come off the table. If you want open access, you got to give. And let's do this because it's good for Canadians. It's good for our consumers. It's good for everybody. I was saying to Barry about telecoms. Let the American telecoms come into Canada and just stomp BCE and stomp Rogers. I would love to see it.
Watch your prices drop. Yep.
Yeah.
Can I interject something on a brilliant point you made? Because you made a brilliant point, and you made it as an outsider, and not as an outsider to this society, because between Canada and the United States, there's really no division except for a line on a map. Okay? We are basically almost the identical society. We're like cousins, okay? But anyway, you made a point about him being different. You made a point about him actually, you know, this may actually be a person I can put some trust and faith in because, you know, from everything I've seen and all of my research, this guy does what he says he's going to do. All right. This is something Barry's heard me say several times before. Because you qualified your statement, and I'm going to amplify on that just a little bit. There is no person on the face of this earth, unless it is the second coming of Jesus, who will ever sit in the Oval Office of the United States of America who does not owe somebody something. It cannot exist. Anybody who sits in the Oval Office has puppet masters. It's a fact, or they wouldn't live a week. We've already lost several of them. It's not like it can't be done. Trump is, okay? Trump is bought and paid for. When this guy went broke, who bailed him out? The Rothschilds. Need I say much more? But when you have two options, Hillary Clinton, who would have dragged us into global governance that would have turned America into a third world power before the end of her 8 years, or Trump, who promised us he would make America great again. Who do you think we voted for? Does that mean he's Superman? Does that mean he's perfect? Does that mean he doesn't owe his soul to the devil? Hell no, because all of those are true, and he does owe his soul to the devil, but he was the lesser of two evils.
So where do you think it's all going to go?
I think with Trump in office, we actually may have enough time to accomplish the things we never would have been allowed to accomplish had Hillary won the presidency. All these conservative groups, you think it's bad now for conservative groups? Had Hillary won, we'd all be in hiding. We'd be passing messages on the dark web to keep the government from finding out who we are. I'm not joking. I spent 30 years working with a high security clearance, you know this, Barry, for the Department of Defense for this country. That's what I think. Now, do I believe everything you said, my good friend in Canada, sitting there watching? You hit the nail right on the head. I just wanted to expound a little.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Frank?
No,
that thought.
Well, I think you stemmed the tide. I remember the 10 days before November 8th. I think that was the election day. Forgive me. I remember the 10 days because I built up, like, I have my own small little social media thing, but I had partnered with a couple people in the United States, and we had built up a couple social media platforms into, we're talking hundreds of thousands of people followed these groups and created content. We shared content. We did all this sort of stuff. And that's why I always ask. I always ask, why isn't Congress investigating Canada and me? Because I maximize the use of my free speech to influence your election. I'm sorry to say, but the president of the United States is a pretty big freaking deal for the rest of the world. And I feel I don't get to vote, but you have to tolerate my opinion. That's my opinion. And I'm just like, where's the congressional investigation of Frank Vaughn?
There,
I totally influenced your election.
First off, I agree. I agree. But that's satire for one reason and one reason only. If you're going to get in trouble for doing that and you live outside of the country, imagine how much trouble we would be getting in under the same precept living in this country. Again, we'd all be hiding in the shadows and passing sure. messages on the dark web. No. We welcome. As a matter of fact, how many times do you think the Liberty Beacon, who has web, we have websites scattered across the planet like a shotgun blast at 200 paces. Europe Reloaded, for instance, okay? All the crap that's going on in France right now. Hang your head in freaking shame, okay? But yet we have a website there that is influenced by, well, gee, guess what? How we as Americans see it. Now, it's run by a person who lives in Paris, and it has actual local news. But when it comes to the global perspective, you hit the nail on the head again. Where goes America goes a lot of the world, and if it's good, it's good for everybody. If it's bad, well, fill in the blank.
Well, I just wanted to finish up on your question because you asked me something specific, and I got off on a tangent. When it comes to repression, it comes to repression of speech. The 10 days before the election, I got to see it. I got to see it on the back end of all of the platforms we were using, and I experienced it. I watched as a page with I think at the time it was either 242 or 246,000 total followers. I watched as we would publish content and it wouldn't even reach 1,000 of those people. And typically you would push something out, and if it started getting traction and shares, you know, you would get tens of thousands of views on it. If it didn't get traction, you would get 10, 15,000 views or reach or for your memes or for your video, whatever you were doing. And then I actually watched in the numbers, in the back end, all the different statistics they give you, I watched it drop right to nothing. For 10 days, we had no voice. They had totally deplatformed us. The day after the election, watched the numbers go right back to where they were. And I mentioned to the people I worked with, I'm just like, we just had the eye of Sauron fall upon us. Did you feel that cloak? And it was, dude, it was real. It was real.
Well, you look at Twitter, okay? Twitter claims they're not shadow banning, except Twitter itself is not shadow banning anybody. This is basically employees who have gotten together and realized, you know, they're 99% progressive and realized that, you know, if we really want to influence things, we can just keep people from seeing what these nasty conservatives are saying. And again, on Twitter, the only thing we depend on Twitter are the people who have literally put a following. You know, they're following you, period. We don't depend on anything else simply because how much of the Liberty Beacon do you think Twitter puts out across? We're so shut down, and that's why it's just like on Facebook, okay? We have a lot of following on Facebook, but the only thing we count on are the actual followings, not the page likes. I can go to any page on Facebook and click a like one time and never go back again. But when you're following, then this stuff comes to your newsfeed, okay? You are interested enough. Right. Okay. It's supposed to. That's where I'm getting to. So this is the only thing we count on is the actual followings. I've seen exactly what you're discussing. We have a usual reach over any given day of over 100,000. I look at the same page during the elections or during really political, you know, excitation spots, and I'm looking at 35,000 to 40,000, less than half, 60 to 70% reduction in the reach of that page.
Well, maybe going forward. Go ahead. Maybe going forward here, Roger, you can help Frank get his word out.
I gotta tell you something. We have an internet. Well, everything that's screwed up right now that you and I discuss is not an American, solely an American issue. These are global issues. But what most people don't understand, and they really need to understand, is we are the testing ground for all of this. United States, most GMO'd nation on the planet, okay? The most vaccinated nation on the planet, the most geoengineered nation on the planet, the most drugged nation on the planet. This is a fact. We have the most critically, chronically ill population on the planet, but we spend 10 times more in healthcare than any other nation on the planet. Are we catching a pattern here? So anybody on any nation on this planet who is fearful of the way this is going, if these elitists keep dragging us down this path, is welcome to put a word out on this project.
There you go. Well, I'm glad to introduce you guys today. Go ahead, Frank. You were going to say something, buddy. Your thoughts.
Honestly, I lost it. I just got lost in what was being said there. Yeah, it's just you. Yeah, that's what it was.
Sorry.
Imagine. No. It's fine. This is your deal. I'm the guest here. But just to what you were saying, imagine if Hillary had won. Because what I saw leading up to that election scared me. The type of censorship that I experienced, and then experienced for the next 6 months, because I had to go through 6 or 7 different Facebook accounts before I got one that was stabilized. I mean, I went right through the mill. And look, I'm not posting racist stuff. I'm not posting. Like, I am very considered in what I post, and they're really after you. It's been decent lately, but if she had a one, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
No.
Period.
Mm-hmm. I told you we'd be hiding in the shadows and passing our messages on the dark web. And you hit the nail right on the head. We have been granted time, okay? Again, there's only so much Trump can do. Trump is, in fact, not the top of the food chain. Anybody who thinks he is, the Rothschilds and all of their family tree, all put combined, are estimated to be worth well over $100 trillion. Okay? $100 trillion. All right? Now let's stop and think about that for a second. Trump barely has 1 billion. Is he the master of the universe? There's no way. We've bought some time. What have we bought time to do? Well, we've been trying to do all along, continue to wake people up and take back control. Do we want to do it violently? No. Do we have mechanisms within our governance, constitutions, Bill of Rights, so on and so forth? Absolutely. Can we do it? Yes. All we need is a majority of the people. That's what we bought the time for. And my Canadian brothers and sisters, I've got to tell you something. You know what? There is never in my life that I have seen, and I spent 30 years traveling this planet, literally, I've never seen two countries that fit so well together and so closely together, and where the future of one is dependent on the other. And I freaking love it. I do.
Go ahead, Frank.
I have a very strong admiration for the United States of America. I read American history all the time, and I study your institutions and your structures, and I really admire the Senate and the Congress and the presidency and the balance of power between them, the Supreme Court. I like that you elect people at the local level. I know that in practice, a lot of it has become corrupt. The founders didn't foresee political parties. They didn't foresee certain things that would, the effect of the Federal Reserve notes, all that sort of stuff. They actually fought against that stuff. But, the basic system is amazing, and there's certain aspects of it that I would love to bring into Canada, because we are a constitutional monarchy and in desperate need of updating. Like the Senate structure. If I could take the Senate with its regional, not population based process and apply that to Canada and somehow get our Senate reformed so it functioned the same way, I think our democracy would all of a sudden be 10 times more functional than it is right now. There is a lot we could learn from the American system. And there's been mistakes there. I'm not trying to paint like this utopian picture, and I'm sure you wouldn't either. But, we could, but that's what we do. These governing systems that we live under, it's okay to update them. It's okay to have a conversation with your nation and actually update them and bring them into modern times. That's evolution, baby. So, there's lots that we can learn. And I think there's actually a few things we could teach, the United States, especially about running elections. I don't know what the, I don't know what the next one will be like, but I can tell you, I work elections, and I can tell you, Trudeau got elected fair and square. I have no doubt that his majority is a legitimate majority because of the way our electoral system functions. Will it still function that way, you know, in 2019? I don't know. It's a constant fight. But anyway, yeah, I mean, there's a lot there that we could do for each other.
Oh, hell yeah. And the thing of it is, if you look at the political system of both nations, okay, they pretty much complement each other. They do. What a senatorial component, such as we have in the United States, and again, you're talking checks and balances, okay? You've got a judicial system,
yeah.
And you've got, you know, the Congress, and then you've got the executive branch. These things, they were great in this country because we were born with this, and we've lived with this all along. Plugging something like that into Canada, I don't even know what that would do to your country, but I think it might be really neat to sit here in the United States and watch.
Hey, it'd be neat to experience. The way it works here is we have a first-past-the-post system. What is happening? Somebody's playing harmonica somewhere.
No, that was my phone ringing about a foot and a half from the microphone.
Okay, like all of a sudden there's a band right on. This is getting better all the time.
I'm trying to hang it up in my.
I'm going to sing next, guys.
I'm going to screw myself.
Watch it. I'll start.
No,
go ahead, Frank.
No, with Canada, we have this. I actually think the legislature is wonderful the way that it is. I just think the entire body of government's not complete. So we have a House of Commons, then we have the Senate, and then we have these other positions that are largely ceremonial, the Governor General, who has the power to dissolve the legislature and has other powers, but it's never in practice done because the Queen no longer rules. Anyway, first past the post means that you have truly local representation in our bottom chamber, and we have multiple parties. But where it falls short is our Senate is appointed for life. There's no accountability to the taxpayer, and they don't really show up to work. They don't do anything. If we could get an elected Senate, a regionally elected Senate, it would be the stuff dreams are made of. And then somebody threw this idea at me that you could have an elected governor general, which would function somewhat like a president with a lot less powers, but would have the ability to dissolve the legislature. And you could really craft, without too much constitutional work, a role for the governor general that would really make this country more representative and checked and balanced. Because right now, it's basically one legislature. You get one election every 4 years. They have absolute power if they get a majority, and then they get to stack the Senate the way they want.
We need to update it. You just made another brilliant point here again, because when I said it would be interesting to sit back here in the United States and watch what happens, all right, when you have that type of a governing body that is, quote unquote, appointed for life, okay, and really doesn't have to do much, but at the same time can wield a significant amount of power, all right? These are the puppets. They're not the puppet masters. These are, in fact, the puppets because of exactly where they sit and what they can do. So what I meant by sitting back here and watching it would be interesting is if you suddenly switch to the system that you're describing, which pretty much follows along the lines of what we have in the United States as far as the Senate goes, you're going to be disenfranchising a whole lot of puppet masters all at once, and then you're going to see the same shit up there, excuse me, Barry, that you're seeing down here. Exactly the same thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
but
it would be interesting. It would be.
I'm going to let you talk, Frank. Go ahead. I'm just going to, your knowledge base is a little better than mine on this subject, so just go right at it.
No,
I'm sitting in the background.
I think the opportunity exists,
yes.
Particularly now that we have another party, and it's a party that, I mean, it has a national backing. It's going to take some time, but it's a Canadian revolution. And I mean, we may not get to electoral reform in the next 5 years. I think this is a 10 to 15 year plan, and I've actually started writing the book on it, and I'm researching it, so it's not a very good book right now because I haven't fully hashed out my thoughts. But what we need to be doing is all of our governing institutions, yours included, were designed and thought up in a world that doesn't exist anymore. The world has changed so much that There's nothing, and I mean, the American system is much better positioned to function in this new world if you could get corruption out of the game, but like you say, puppets and puppet masters and everything else.
I like this guy, Barry. I do.
But I mean, you are in a better position. I think Canada, however, has a unique opportunity that you don't, because your system can function. I feel like our system is grinding to a halt. We don't have a functioning federal government, really. We don't have functioning provincial governments. Nobody knows where the lines and boundaries are. And we haven't updated anything significantly since Confederation started. So we can open up and have a conversation, or at least have an alternative plan for how to run our Senate, how to run the Governor General, maybe even introduce referenda into the equation on major issues. We can actually go right to the public and have accountable referendums that won't cost a fortune to the taxpayer. I firmly believe that Canada can build a system of governance that will lead Europe into this age, this new age that we're coming into. Someone's got to do it. Someone's going to have to do it. And whether it happens on the heels of some sort of chaotic, traumatic experience that we all share because we didn't get the job done peacefully or stably, and the world is rocked by war or some sort of disaster and we don't get it figured out, out of that chaos would come, oh God, I hate to paraphrase Bush, but would come a new order. And I mean that innocuously. We have to update our governing system in this country. But to me, that's a process it's down the road somewhere. The first thing we have to do is build an alternative party and an alternative politics that will actually allow that to happen, which is where we are right now. So let's not get too far ahead of the game.
So we just heard your 10 to 15 year plan, and I absolutely love it, because a lot of what you just said, if you take out the specific titles for politics or the specific titles for leaders, a lot of what you just described is exactly what's needed globally. Now, let me explain something to anybody listening here. Am I a globalist? No. Is it inevitable that there will be a centralized government eventually on this planet? If we continue to evolve as a civilization, yes, it's going to happen. But it needs to happen under the right conditions and the right pretexts. It doesn't need to happen under the auspice of global warming, which was a way to suck literally so far several $1 trillion out of the pockets of very poor people into the pockets of very rich people. The globalism we're looking at today is to benefit a very, very small minority, 1% or less of this population. What we need to do is we need a global interlocking of arms as we go forward. We do need some sort of a global structure going forward, but it needs to be to benefit the people, not the damn 1%. And this is where I agree with you 1,000%, because if everybody took that basic formula you just described, including the United States, which I believe has one of the most modern governments and most easily malleable governments on the planet, we need Absolutely. To do some work. Because if we don't, if I can honestly say to you, who I consider at this point to be a very good activist, that we're doing everything we can, and at this point you would never believe another word that comes out of my mouth. The United States is in such a state of ill repair right now and ill repute right now that for any activist to say we're doing all we can immediately makes everything he says suspect. So this is my applauding your 10 to 15 year plan.
Mm. Well, exactly. Right now it's a pipe dream.
Well, yeah, but we all have pipe dreams.
But you're right though, Frank. It's going to be a 15 year plan. Right now we can't change the structure overnight. So we have to work within that structure and getting back to, getting back to third party. But I Kelly wanted one question to you guys, and she wanted me to put this thought forward. What do you think of the possibility of civilian vigilante groups rising and standing up against this madness? That was the question she wanted to put to me, to you guys.
All right.
Your question. The possibility of civilian vigilante groups starting up the front to fight this crazy madness going on.
Well, I can tell you from a Canadian perspective, there's a lot of talk out there, but there's no action. It's not going to happen anytime soon. So I can't speak to the United States because, as much as we are cousins, we're a very different culture, but, there's a lot of people who talk big, But the fact is there's food in your larder. Actually, that's such an archaic term. There's food in your fridge. There is, you know, there's most people have heat. Most people, the vast majority of people, even the poorest, people on welfare, 70% of welfare recipients have air conditioning. I mean, they're talking about in Ontario closing schools for kids when they don't have air conditioning. And I'm like, are you kidding me? But anyway, I don't see it yet. Now, a crisis, an economic crisis, a trade war with the United States that cripples our economy, a war, anything can change the calculus. But as things are right now, to Kelly's question, I do not see Canadians rising up. I see a lot of talk. I don't see it happen.
I would tend to agree with you, and I would tell you that right across the border, the dynamic changes rather drastically. We have seen for the past 10 years, 10, all of Obama and 2 years of Trump so far, we have seen a severely intense, well-focused laser beam of distraction and division. It has come via the mainstream media. It has come via college professors. It has come via these big tech giants shadow banning and pretty much closing down the word of conservative organizations. We see right now in this country, and we are the majority, no matter what the liberals tell you, Trump never would have been elected. We are the majority. All right. This is a big difference in the dynamic between the United States and Canada. The largest standing army on the face of this planet is not, okay, and by standing, I shouldn't say standing, the largest could be civilian army on the planet is one that easily outsizes any military on this planet. The United States is, theoretically, this is what they're saying, could have as many as 300 to 500 million guns in private hands. Stop and think about that number. That's more than the Chinese have in their arsenal. This is the difference. What we are seeing is people like Soros and so on and so forth that are funding people like Antifa, who are coming out and committing violence intentionally to spark additional violence, separation, to get that, okay, you walked into my store, you've got to make America great hat on, you make me sick, you need to leave. That's not America, okay? So can it happen in the United States? If Trump declares martial law and a state of emergency, you will see, okay, militia all across the country step up, not in revolution. You will see them step up to do exactly what the president is asking them to do. Could that be a reality in the United States? Take a look at what's happening with Kavanaugh. Take a look at what's happening with Clinton. And I could go on and on and on. Is it a possibility? More likely than ever since the last Civil War in this country, it has never been more likely than it is today in America.
That's why I would agree with that 100%.
Yeah. So I got back to what I was saying earlier, Roger, about the collapse of all these people being taken down in a very, very short period, what the ripple effect would be through America and how Americans and how that would justify groups that are sitting on the border right now are sitting, waiting for the word go. We know, I mean, look, we could talk about the compound in New Mexico to say that there isn't multiple of those cells existing in the United States of America. I think you'd have to have your head in the sand. And same thing we'd be saying about Canada right now. This is all being protected by our government, being brought in for a particular time when the word go is gone. And that's what I see coming. Yeah. So, you know, when I say to people, you know, when things really start to get crazy, because I believe they're going to get crazy, you got to keep your head focused, because, you know, and I know, Roger, when people's minds are thrown into a state of chaos, they'll do just about anything to get rid of that scream inside of their brain.
Larry, so I'm hoping this never, ever happens.
I
would like to ask people to do something. I would like to ask everybody to do something. If it does happen, one of the first things you're going to see go away is your power. How dependent on you are you on the internet to talk to all of your friends everywhere? Do you have any real friends in your community? Do you know the name of the person living next door? If you need to protect your property, Can you trust them? Do they trust you? Do they have guns? Do you have guns? All of these things are considerations, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
These are things people need to think about, not after the fact. I just got done saying the likelihood of a civil war in this country is at a higher point than it has ever been since our last civil war. Okay, that doesn't mean it's going to happen, and everybody on this call truly wishes it doesn't, okay? But if it does, be aware. Your internet life and all of your friends are gone. I hope to Christ you know your neighbors.
Good point, Jordan. Good point. Yeah, you know, really, I didn't mean to say that it's going to happen 100%, but realistically,
right.
You know, you got to be realistic about all the things that we see coming together right now.
Yep.
And, you know, the more push is going to push, more push and more push, there's going to come a breaking point. And to say that these people don't have a plan, because we know they sit in round tables and we know they have conversations, they plan things out years in advance. They know how.
They have 100-year plans.
Yeah, of course they do. And they're sitting in their little think tanks and they know how society is going to react to what's going to be brought forward. I think you have to have your head in the sand. I hope it never comes to that, Roger. I hope it doesn't come to that.
Hold on 1 second, because you're talking about they sit there and they plan for humanity. And we had this little exchange here about it's done over years or centuries. Mm. All right, let me give everybody out there so they understand why it has to be done that way. When you're talking about manipulating an entire race of humanity, okay? If you're on the ocean in an aircraft carrier, probably the largest ship on the planet, and you're doing 40 knots or 35 knots, and you try to make a 90-degree hairpin turn, disaster. It doesn't work. How does an aircraft carrier turn? It nudges a few degrees here, continuously. You look at the arc of an aircraft carrier turning around, it will cover the state of Rhode Island, just about, okay? This is the point. Nothing gets done fast. They look at society, and a little explosion here, false flag. A little explosion here, 9/11, false flag. Little explosion here, you know, Newton school shootings. Little explosion there. And what you see is an entire society, like the United States, moving away from liberty and towards, I'm scared, the boogeyman's going to get me, I'll gladly give up my freedoms, protect me. Where have I got this wrong?
Frank.
Well, that's how you're absolutely correct, because the people, the powers that be, don't necessarily benefit if the entire house of cards comes falling down. Controlled warfare is one thing. Having a little war where the plebeians go off and kill each other, that's not a problem. You can still have a dinner party and discuss where the battle lines are and what the parameters are. But if the entire global economy that they've built, and they have built it, of fiat money and the banking system were to come careening down, they would probably be the first ones to die, because everybody and their uncle is going to storm their little compounds and storm their towers, because that's where all the riches are, because people are, in general, they don't prioritize food. They don't prioritize neighbors. I mean, that advice you gave about your neighbors, forget global collapse. That's just for basic living. You should know who the people are around you, and you should probably know who can defend themselves and who can't, and who can build and who can. But I mean, that's common sense stuff. But back to your point, these people don't benefit if their whole plan comes off the rails. So of course, by increments, by degrees, if you had have talked to a person living in the 1950s or the 1960s and described the world of today, whether a Canadian or an American described the world of today, they would have said, you're absolutely crazy. There is no way that's ever going to happen. And here we are.
Yes.
Listen to Paul Harvey, 1965.
Absolutely. I've got to tell you something. You couldn't write comic books that are more sensational than this. If anybody tells me I was born at the wrong time, I'm going to say you're a freaking idiot. This is the most
exciting time. That's a great time to be alive.
Oh, God, the most exciting time you could possibly imagine to be alive. That doesn't mean it's the most fun, the most enjoyable. It just means that, damn it, as soon as something cools off, something else burning your ass, you better turn around.
Yep, it is. I feel like I'm 38 years old, and I feel like since as long as I can remember, the first book I read was on the Second World War. I was 6 years old. It was about 300 pages. I didn't understand half the words in it, but I read it cover to cover. And I remember thinking through my single digits and through my teens that I was waiting for something. And even through my 20s that I was waiting for something, because I looked around, whether it was Ontario, the province I live in, or whether it was Canada, whether it was the United States, I didn't have any hope. I didn't have any prospects. I didn't think there was anything there. And now, all of a sudden, at this stage, I feel like this is the time. This is what I've been waiting for. This active historic moment that is literally going to set the stage, maybe not just for the next 80 to 100 years, but maybe for the next 300 years. Because what you observed about the Civil War and our time and being closer to a Civil War, and it being, you know, for the United States, it being as precipitous as it has been in 150 years, I would actually argue that this is more dire, the crux, the crucible of history. It all balances on this moment. I think it's more important than anything from 1776 forward or even before 1776. Like, this is a defining moment in global history. If we don't get it right, it's the reset button. So we gotta figure it out.
I honestly believe. Absolutely. I honestly believe with all of my heart that your point couldn't be more correct. I also absolutely believe, totally and with my heart, that it is in the hands of the American people right now. I'm not saying there's nothing for the Canadians to do in their own country. We've already discussed that. We're talking about the biggest, most defining moment. We've discussed where goes America goes. We've discussed, look, we're the biggest military bully on the frickin' planet. We literally have troops. Remember what I did for a living for 30 years. We literally have troops, okay, either out in the open, or hidden away so nobody knows they're there, in 172 out of 194 countries on the planet. That's freaking insanity. So I believe you are extremely accurate, and I also believe that it is in the hands of the American population, those people who happen to own anywhere between 300 million and 500 million guns.
Those guns, I've often said, the Second Amendment in the United States is the entire reason that my freedoms, for what they are worth, sometimes they're not worth much, but for what they are worth,
yes,
are entirely dependent on 2A in the United States. One of the reasons I care so much about American politics is there is a knock-on effect. There's a cultural effect, so that, say, when Trump gets elected, puppet or no, or what he represents, the foothold, yep, the stopping line, whatever, that gave us respite to find our own path. It's not that, you know, people always say, oh, you're so pro-Trump and all this other stuff. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with looking at the place we are in history and the fact that we now have a respite, and Canadians can come up, yeah, with our own answer to the times. It's not about importing Trump. It's about coming up with our own solutions. And thankfully, you guys got the job done down there to the point that we now have some time. We bought a bit of time, and that's a wonderful thing. So you're right. What happens down there does affect the West.
If Hillary would have gotten in, just to finish up what you just said, if Hillary would have gotten in, okay, I'm telling you, by the end of her second term, North America would have been a subjugated continent in the global government. Mm-hmm. None of us, mm-hmm, would have any liberty. None.
I don't think anybody can underestimate how terrible it is.
It would have been Obama 2.0.
Why is she still walking free? Why?
Because and more people need to understand this. There is a point by which you cannot do something because of repercussions. What most people don't understand, and just a little bit we know, people that are implicated in the crimes she is implicated in cover a big smidgen of the government. You notice I use big and then the word smidgen. If everything that she and her corrupt cronies around her in the government were made public, the entire government would collapse. What is best for a nation? How much of this can be done, yeah, in the shadow?
Well, my next question would be, how do you think
Okay, my next question would be, with the information I believe that's going to come forward here, is the collapse inevitable? Because once you start taking down the House of Cards, Roger, the whole House of Cards should fall. Am I not correct?
No, because...
That's one of my concerns. Go ahead.
That's why you have the executive order for martial law in this country. That's why you have national emergencies. All of these are within the realm of the commander-in-chief. Right. And if Trump states that so much of the government has been impacted, whether it's senators going to jail, congressmen going to jail, people in the administrative branch, judges going to jail, that we need to mend on declaring martial law. It will go from, we'll discuss it with Congress about renewing it, I don't know what, a year from now, whatever. But the point here is there's going to have to be a period of time where those senatorial seats can be refilled, where those administrative jobs can be refilled, where those judges' seats can be refilled. It's going to have to happen. Now, what I said was, I see us close to revolution, but the revolution I'm seeing is Trump declaring emergency, okay, a national emergency, and martial law. At that point, you're going to see all of these progressives, all of a sudden, they're going to be Billy Badasses. But when most people understand that progressives hate guns, maybe 10%, 5 to 10% of those 500 million guns are in progressive hands. 90% or more are in conservative hands. That's the point. They will step up and say, aye, aye, Mr. President, these militias, what can we do to help maintain law and order? That's what you're going to see in this country. And yes, I do expect to see that happen if the president has to declare martial law.
Well, you know, we're down to the last 6 minutes of this show. I can't believe that hour went that fast, but I knew this conversation was going to get really lively when I introduced you two guys to each other. And Frank, I'm going to let you add some thoughts here for a couple of minutes. We've got about five minutes left in the show.
Well, no, just building
on
what you
said. By the way. Go ahead, Frank.
It's been great. I've had a great time. What you said about what you expect, it goes back to what I was saying about collapse not benefiting anybody. If you are going to restore, if you're going to drain the swamp, which if you're going to actually do it, that means you're bringing down not just most of the American government, you're starting to branch into bringing down the governments of the world, which means it's not just as simple oh my God, I can't believe I just said it's simple. It's not simple. That you have to have a plan for how to maintain the architectural structure, the actual infrastructure of government when you bring it all down. And when you do that, you also have a knock-on effect. That's that whole American sphere thing. So if you bring down if you bring this out in the open, what you know, then you're also going to affect Canada. You're going to affect Great Britain. You're going to affect France. You're going to affect Germany. That's why it's global, right? This isn't just America. This is global.
Yes.
So right now in Canada, what are we doing? We're trying to build an alternative filled with honest people who are going to go into politics, and Max Bernier is that leader. And I don't know if it's I think the times themselves are enough. They're enough on their own to explain the outgrowth of this sort of honest politics and how it has to be developed. It has to be in place, because if you're going to knock globalism down, you have to do it and maintain. Like, what's the point if you burn civilization to the ground? If you're trying to save civilization, you better have a plan for saving it, not just burning the temple down, you know? And I know you know that.
Yeah, but again, I just want to reemphasize, because you keep making these brilliant points. I am not against globalism. It's inevitable. Globalism is inevitable, okay?
But what does it look like?
But again, that's my point, all right? The globalism stuffed down our throats is for the benefit of less than 1% of the population. Globalism that affects the entire population of the planet would be absolutely advantageous and glorious.
It's a matter of how it's achieved.
Yes.
And it's a matter of who it serves.
Absolutely.
Well said. Exactly. Roger, before we shut the show out, can you plug your station and network and what's going on? And Frank, the same thing with you for a few seconds, and then we're out of time, gentlemen.
Well, I'll give you the flagship, because we've got a bunch of websites. If you're looking for European news, you can go to europereloaded.com. But the flagship is the LibertyBeacon.com. And if you're looking for TV shows, and we're going to get Barry to do a show on that network real soon, you watch, that's TLBTV.com. And last count, I think we had 8 active proprietary websites, 4 either being upgraded or totally rebuilt, the online TV network, and 21 global partner websites. So this is, in my eyes, and nobody's proved me wrong yet, after 9 years, we are the largest totally unfunded, okay, so we owe nobody nothing, global network on the planet, true independent media. And thank you for giving me the time to do that, Barry. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, sir, having you in. Frank, where can people find you and follow you?
Very simply, you can find my website, frankvaughn.ca. That's V-A-U-G-H-A-N, or you can find me on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube. All you have to do is search FPV, Frank Vaughn, V-A-U-G-H-A-N. You can find me. And I do podcasts, political commentary, whatever. Yeah.
Frank, I would like, if Barry could send me a way to get a hold of you, I'd like to chat with you. Maybe
you could share
some of your information on Flagship. Okay?
I'd be happy. Happy to.
Great. Absolutely phenomenal. Thank you, Barry.
Truly the time to amalgamate everybody together, guys. And that's what I see happening right now. And it's inspiring. I'm experiencing that left, right, and center where people are really, really starting to get together, and we're all fighting a very, very, very important fight, because if we lose this, the future for mankind does not look good, but we're going to win this fight. I thank you, Frank, for joining me today. Like I said, I really, really enjoy talking with you, sir, and look forward to talking to you again in the future. And Roger, you know I'm going to be calling you again in a couple of weeks to do a show with me, so you can count on that. And thanks, guys, for joining us today. This has been, I say it every time I do a show, this has been the greatest show I've ever done, and I've really enjoyed this more than any other show. But today, again, I've kind of gone over top of that, and I feel this is one of the most enjoyable shows I've done for a while. So thanks for tuning in and listening. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. Thanks to my guests for taking their time today. Thank you for Steve for producing my shows, and for People's Internet Radio for providing this platform for me to share my thoughts every week and allowing my guests to share the thoughts. Great show, guys. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week, same time, same place.